This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. With your host, Joe Longo.
I feel like the new intro. Anyway, welcome to the latest episode of the FC Yahoo Podcast. I'm Joe Lago, editor of the FC Yahoo blog. And here to talk more soccer is Shahan Ahmed.
Hey, Joe. Welcome back from the desert.
It was fun. I finally saw the Grand Canyon. Joey Galino.
I heard that you really liked a particular 10 minutes of the podcast last week.
So I was rudely interrupted by my kids on the drive to the Grand Canyon. That's why I only got 10 minutes in. And Leander Charlakens.
What did you bring me, Joe?
I got you a t-shirt. I did not. I didn't get
humidity.
Any. Yeah, there you go. I got dirt on all of my shoes walking through the Grand Canyon, which was snowy and kind of hard to see, actually, because it was foggy the entire time. But it's off my bucket list. All that's left is Camp Nou and the Bernabeu, I think. Anyway, so soccer. A few weeks back.
Is that why we're here?
A few weeks back, we broke down the Champions League quarterfinal matchups right after the draw. And in case you guys have forgotten, I went back and listened to the podcast. This is basically what we said. This is a summary of all of our opinions. We felt Atletico would end Leicester's Cinderella run. We thought Dortmund had the edge over Monaco, although we felt it could go either way because of the teams with all their attacking talent was going to make it an entertaining and interesting tie. I thought that we felt Bayern Munich would get past Real Madrid. I think there was a lot of, well, I think you brought it up, Joey, that you know no one's ever won the Champions League back-to-back.
Right.
That was kind of the jumping
off. Well, I think it was a split room because Joey and I were saying that Bayern would go through, and I think you and Leander were saying it was Real, and I think Alex was probably the tiebreaker, but he's not here, so he doesn't count. So it's a split room.
And we'll get to Alex later. We'll make fun of his picks later. And we felt a solid Juventus squad had a really good chance to beat the comeback Kings, Barcelona.
Feeling less confident about that right now.
So here's the question. We're not, you know, we could go through all the matchups again, but just do you guys have any disagreements or any changes to these assessments that we had?
Here, I'll start with this. I remember kind of the linchpin of the argument about Borussia Dortmund going through against Monaco being that while we all respect and admire the attacking talent that Monaco has put together, they are a young team that's relatively inexperienced at this stage, and Dortmund obviously has one of the greatest home field advantages anywhere in the world, you know, let alone UEFA. So we were kind of counting on, even though Dortmund's got some injuries of their own and they may be a little undermanned against Monaco, but they are more experienced. They do have, you know, the home field advantage. The more I think about that, I'm not sure I'm going to switch over to Monaco going through as opposed to Borussia Dortmund, but you know, the way that the Monaco fans turned out for their round of 16 tie against Manchester City, no one's arguing that Monaco's got that kind of home field advantage. No one's arguing that it's a great soccer atmosphere there. But I almost wonder that if the young guys on Monaco are so young that it won't even matter and they won't get rattled by playing at a place like the Westfalenstadion. So I guess, you know, if you're thinking about in terms of like hedging on picks and things like that, the more and more I thought about it, if the whole idea is that the yellow wall or whatever they call it is going to be the ultimate deciding factor, you know, something not on the pitch, that's something that could go either way in that tie, if you ask me.
I was in that either way camp. But then I didn't watch the game, but I saw the result in the French Cup final. You know, Monaco lost 4-1 to PSG. Shahan, you saw the game. The way I take the result is that was kind of a test for them to, you know, big game. How do the kids react to playing for something? They're playing for a trophy, and they end up getting, you know, beaten 4-1.
Well, PSG was really good, and I think PSG is a better team than Dortmund if you really, you know, zoom out and really look at the talent. And PSG really should have gone past Barcelona, save for the greatest comeback we've ever seen, possibly. So I think it's tough to just say that because they lost to PSG, they're not going to beat Dortmund. When you look at that squad, it's still chock full with talent, and they've performed in Europe. So I'm not really going off of that at all. I think that Monaco still is the team that I would kind of give a bit of an edge to, just because like I think Mbappe is great, and I think it's going to be tough to stop him. On the other end, obviously, Aubameyang. I think it's a very, very close tie. I don't take anything out of that. I will say there was an exquisite Edinson Cavani goal, and we all know how much Leander loves Edinson Cavani. So I will just add that.
Look at that segue.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Leander. What do you think about it?
Isn't talking about a segue kind of ruining the segue, though?
It is. I just tainted it.
It's a segue upon a segue.
You know, Monaco does have a lot of talent. I think that, being honest, there's some experience there. Joao Moutinho, even though he doesn't always start, sort of has been around the block, and obviously Radamel Falcao has. But I can't quite recall who I handicapped as the winner in this matchup the last time we talked about them, and that's probably because they're so close. But, you know, there's so much attacking talent on both teams. But then Dortmund has some real defensive issues that I think Monaco is much less afflicted by. The last time Monaco made a deep run in the Champions League, they kind of did it entirely off the back of a defense, and they would occasionally nab a goal, whereas now Dortmund or Monaco has that balanced out, I think, with a stronger attack. Dortmund just is leaky in the back, and you see that hurt them time and time again in the Bundesliga. They're way behind this season. I think they're already 10 points behind Bayern, if they were ever really in it at all. So on that score, I think Monaco definitely has the edge. But, you know, it's two games, and that's the beauty of these knockout stages, and that's what makes it so incredibly hard to win this tournament. You know, you can fake your way through two games. Your defense, even if it's shaky, can hold up for two games. That's not impossible. I do think Monaco still has the edge.
And that would be a recipe for disaster for Dortmund. I mean, the first game is at the Westfalenstadion, and you know, if that leaky defense gives up some away goals, that really puts Dortmund in the hole, even if they get a manageable result going back to Monaco. So that's a very good point.
Yeah, and I actually, that kind of ties into something that I was thinking about the rest of the matches too. And when I say this, I'm speaking strictly as a fan. I have a preternatural bias to hating road games, if you will. Like, if I'm watching a team, even in another sport that I root for, in the NBA, MLB, whatever it may be, go on the road as opposed to going, you know, starting a series or whatever at home, it's almost like I hate being on the road more, so I'd want to do that first and then take my chances at home. And I look at who's on the road to start these round of 16 or round of 8 ties: Real Madrid, Leicester City, Barcelona. Teams that, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid obviously are the two titans of Spain, and they, while it's not going to be easy going to Bayern and Juve, you can easily see them, you know, scoring a goal or two in those places, and they have that advantage going back into the second leg. And Barcelona, we saw in the last round of 16 tie with PSG, doesn't even need that advantage. They'll just wipe it out by scoring a bunch of goals at the Nou Camp anyway. Now, I'm not saying, excuse me, that Juventus is as poor defensively, relatively speaking, as PSG, but I would want to kind of be that team that goes in and is sort of smashing and grabbing to start and then has the home match in their back pocket, provided they don't lose like 6-0 in the first match or something like that. And for Leicester, you know, you kind of have no choice but to adapt, because you're being thrown into the fire, the Vicente Calderon. You're not at home at the King Power, just, you know, where you're more comfortable. You kind of are forced to adapt tactically. You're forced to adapt emotionally right off the bat, and that might serve them better than getting comfortable at home and maybe playing a poorer match than they would have in the first leg otherwise if they were on the road. So I think it might actually work out for all three of these teams that they're going to be going on the road to start. And again, it's sort of a bias on my part, but you know, I think that's something to watch.
You said three, so you don't think that helps Monaco?
Well, I think it does, but I think we already talked about Monaco, so.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that's one other thing. You know, they started on the road against Man City and were able to come back and erase that deficit. And we saw how much they attacked away from home in Manchester, although Manchester's crowd, obviously, in the Champions League is...
the empty head?
Yeah, it's awful. Well, they boo the Champions League anthem, and everybody cheers the Champions League anthem. I don't understand it. In any case, you know, in looking at it, I think that Bayern-Real Madrid matchup now, a couple weeks removed, actually stands out above that Juve-Barca matchup. Because in watching Barca, especially what they did to Sevilla, you know, people always say, some people say losing the weekend before you play a Champions League match is actually a good thing. I look at the match midweek before, because that's when coaches really say, okay, we're a week away, we can kind of try some. Barcelona played Sevilla a week away from playing the, you know, quarterfinals of the Champions League, and they dominated that match. If you saw, Sevilla couldn't touch the ball. It was it looked like Xavi was on the field pinging passes around. It, you know, Iniesta looked awesome. Those goals were just sensational. You're talking about, you know, cutbacks when you would normally see people shooting. They were cutting the ball back and making the extra pass. The overhead kick from Suarez, Messi just waiting for a ball to get pinged around until he decides, oh, wait, it's a corner. I was the furthest man out. I'm just going to run in full blast this left-footed. No one's going to stop it. It was sensational football if you actually watched it. That makes me think that Juve is in trouble, because if Barcelona is playing like that, I don't care who you are, it's going to be tough to stop them. But that Bayern-Real match, ooh, I'm so curious to see how that first leg goes. I think Bayern at the Allianz could really rattle Real. And as good as Real may be and has been recently, I think that first leg could really, really change their season quickly. Because we're talking about them coming off Madrid derby, playing that match, and I believe, second leg, right after the second leg, they played El Clasico. This next 3-4 matches is make or break for their season, potentially in the league and in the Champions League.
Yeah, doesn't Bayern have a few guys expected to rest for the Der Klassiker? So it really is.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, so like Leander was saying, Bayern is 10 points clear of second place. They're actually, I believe, 15 points clear of Dortmund. Dortmund is, I believe, 10 points clear of fifth place. So they're comfortably into that number four spot. Both teams should have players resting for Der Klassiker. It's about as inconsequential of a Dortmund-Bayern game as we've seen in some time, because both teams are relatively in the positions where they're safe. But at the same time, they both have big European matches coming up that, frankly, should take precedence. And, you know, to put our cards on the table, we're recording this before the weekend, so we don't know who's going to get rest and who's not. But in looking forward to it, it seems as though there's no real reason to put your best guys, put especially the older guys like Xavi Alonso or Philipp Lahm, no reason for them to play.
Yo, going into the weekend, the longest winning streaks in Europe's top leagues, there are four teams that have won 5 in a row in their domestic leagues. Atletico Madrid's one, Real Madrid is another, Tottenham Hotspur is the third, the fourth, Leicester City. Leicester City is also among the three that have the longest winning streak in all competitions in Europe's top leagues. Six games, Real Madrid, Spurs, and Leicester. This form that Leicester has right now, do you, you know, initially after the draw, we said Atletico was still going to get by Leicester. What do you... Do you give Leicester even more of a chance with the form that they have right now?
I think it doesn't hurt. I think that the fact that they're playing well and they've kind of rediscovered something is something that bodes well for them. It's just, for me, it's hard to reconcile the fact that there is a huge difference between moving up in the table out of the relegation zone in England and being asked to beat Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Now, that being said, Sevilla is a team that we all admired, and Leicester City was able to, about 3 weeks ago now, I think, to do the job and knock them out. And they've actually been better, if I'm not mistaken, this year in La Liga than Atletico Madrid has. I just question whether or not you can really read too much into those results that Atleti's had this year, because they've, for a few months now, it just seems like they're like, okay, we are in the battling for top four in La Liga, that's fine. And we're going to kind of pour our eggs into this Champions League basket. And if Atletico Madrid pours all its eggs into the Champions League, I don't care what kind of form Leicester's in. It's going to be tough for me to see a way through for them.
We're going to throw it to Leander, but before we do, I just want to add Craig Shakespeare, with 6 wins in the Premier League, now ties Pep Guardiola and Carlo Ancelotti as the only managers to start their Premier League careers with 6 straight wins. Take that, Leander.
Well, I think what we have to keep in mind is Leicester's been very good, but so has Atletico. In their last 15 La Liga games, they've lost just once, and that was to Barcelona. They've won 5 in a row. They're not giving up a lot of goals. They've had 2 shutouts in a row. They gave up a goal against Sevilla, but before that, they had 2 more shutouts. It's not like Atletico is sort of worse than before Swansea went on this run. I mean, Leicester. You know, Leicester is better, but Atletico is the same. And so if you take for instance, last season's Leicester at its best against last season's or this season's Atletico, you probably still give the edge to Atletico. Just, you know, player for player in every position with guys like Griezmann and Saul Niguez and all these guys. Like, I still think Atletico is the better team there.
Yeah, I'm still picking Atletico too. I'm sorry not to get this confused at all. I definitely don't think that Leicester is going to win. I think it'll be interesting and entertaining. A lot more interesting than it would have been a month ago or what we would have thought a month ago. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Atletico is gotten to the Champions League final two of the last 3 years.
And they've really had a stress-free run here. You know, the last round, Leverkusen didn't challenge them at all. I mean, Jan Oblak had to make some saves in the second leg, but, you know, Leicester had to come back. Like, all these other teams have had to go through some type of adversity, and Atletico is just doing what it does.
I think also, you know, we want to believe in Leicester because I think part of us, just as impartial observers, love that story from last year. Here's something that's not magical or anything like that. This is reality. The teams that Leicester faced in recent run of form, you could argue that Liverpool was easily the best attacking side they faced in the league. The rest of the teams are all bottom five or something like that in terms of goals scored. So going from that to, as you mentioned, Antoine Griezmann and company, going to be a little bit different of a test, I think.
To correct something I said earlier, Sean is right. Bayern is in first place by 10 points, but second place is Red Bull Leipzig, and they are 15 points ahead of Dortmund in fourth place, and Dortmund in turn is 10 points ahead of Köln in fifth place. So this is, like we were saying, one of the least consequential German classics in a long time.
By the way, that Shahan is right is now a drop. It's getting added
it's
to
literally already won.
You're going to regret that, Leander.
I know, it's a terrible decision. Shahan is right. Shahan is right.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Bayern-Real Madrid game. Obviously, that, you know, it's tough for me to say that's going to be the bigger game over Juventus-Barcelona. They're all four teams really should be in the semifinals. But how do you see Bayern-Real Madrid really playing out with Bayern playing the first leg at home?
I like Bayern. Honestly, if they played the way they did in that first leg at home against Arsenal, and I understand, yes, it was Arsenal. They're, you know, professionals at messing it up, especially in the Champions League in that round. But if Bayern is playing at that level, and I don't really care if it is against Real Madrid, I think that they end up taking a grip of that tie. And I think that Bayern's a good enough, solid enough, deep enough team that has the right type of experience as a manager on the sideline too. And that's not to take anything away from Real Madrid. I just think that this squad is as mature as it's going to be because, like we said, we've talked about in the past, they have a couple guys retiring, some of the leadership retiring. So they're due for a bit of a change. But at the same time, they have so much young talent included into that mix as well. And then Robert Lewandowski is banging in goals. So when you look at it from back to front, and the goalkeeper also plays in. I mean, Manuel Neuer is in great form, and he's an incredible goalkeeper. I think they have the edge there, if nowhere else. Yeah, it's really going to be, I think, the best tie in this round, and I give the slight edge to Bayern on this one.
Yeah, something that Arturo Vidal said recently caught my ear, so to speak. He you know, last year Atleti knocked Bayern Munich out in the semifinals of the Champions League. And this is obviously another team, the other team, if you will, from Madrid that they're facing. But it's hardly the same thing. You know, Atleti's much stronger defensively in general, as we've mentioned before. And, you know, Atleti was able to nick a couple goals that they needed and win sort of a lower scoring affair than you expect this to be. Real Madrid, he said, was not going to sit back, and I obviously don't expect that to happen. And boy, I just, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're talking about going to the Allianz Arena against this Bayern Munich side and playing open, well, you better hope, you know, I guess what I'm saying is you need guys like Cristiano Ronaldo and Bale and Benzema, because that's the only way you'll have a chance to keep up with the pace that that Bayern can throw back at you and how they can spread you out. And as Shahan mentioned, as, you know, one of the elite strikers in the world, Robert Lewandowski, in fine form. It's just, I don't like that proposition To my ear, that proposition sounds a little off. So I think Bayern is got the advantage, especially in the first leg, but also overall in the tie. So I will not change that prediction from my first from our first podcast.
Here's to borrow a college sports term. Here's where strength of schedule tends to come into play, and I kind of want to get into this a little bit later as well. But like we've established twice now, Bayern has a 10-point lead. They also only have 7 league games to go because they play a 34-game season in Germany. Which means that, you know, they can split their games the rest of the way and probably still win the title fairly comfortably. So there's really no pressure on their league season at all anymore, which allows them to rest guys, to rotate, to make sure that they're just right for the Champions League run. And this is an advantage Bayern Munich always seems to have. I mean, recall that 5 seasons ago, they won the league by 25 points. That's a luxury that Real Madrid will never have because they have the misfortune of being in a league with Barcelona. They're in first place, they're up 2 points, and they have a game in hand. So they're actually in about as cozy a position as they're ever going to find themselves. But they're still within a game or two margin for error, and they just can't afford to do that. And to really tailor their personnel, their lineups from game to game towards their European campaign. That it's going to be really hard for them, I think, to match Bayern in terms of rest and just freshness that they can offer their players.
Yeah, and building off of that real quick, we've all hailed Zidane and the job that he's done since he took over at Real Madrid, and rightfully so. He's facing, you know, one of the boss Champions League managers of all time in Carlo Ancelotti, a manager who coincidentally managed this very same team for the most part to the Champions League crown, in 2014? So not that far removed. Tactically, this is going to be an interesting battle, and I'm not so sure Zidane has not met his match already with Ancelotti on the other touchline.
What do you guys think is the key matchup? You know, we talked about the you know, the tangibles about this tie, but on the field, I just feel like when I think of who could stop whom, who could easier. When I think of Real Madrid's, you know, front three, I feel like Bayern can do a better job of corralling them, and I just don't know if Real Madrid really has, even if they have an immense performance from their midfield to control Bayern's attack. There are just way too many, you know, dangerous options in Bayern's attack, what Shahan was talking about. And then you get late in the game and they throw in a Kingsley Coman, you know, or you just have too many guys.
One of the most overlooked players internationally and domestically, if you really think about how much talent that kid has. We saw it in the Bayern-Juve matchup last year, yeah, where, you know, he was technically, I believe, on loan still, and just destroyed his parent club for the moment. Yeah, you know, I think for Real Madrid, and it gets overlooked because everybody just goes to the, you know, Bale, Benzema, yeah, Cristiano, BBC. But I think that Modric, Casemiro, and Toni Kroos, is a big, big portion of this because he provides the assists to a lot of these goals. For Real Madrid to succeed, those three have to be playing top-notch. And, you know, Casemiro needs to be crushing the plays.
The ball winning has to be all over.
Exactly. He needs to, you know, do what he did last year, frankly, when on their run. And then Modric and Toni Kroos need to be on the same wavelength, but Modric needs to really dribble through and have that possession and have that type of game that we all know he's capable of doing. And that, you know, and then Toni Kroos has to provide that service. Honestly, I don't think it's about the BBC nearly as much as it's about that middle three. Yeah. And, you know, we overlook this, but they do have Sergio Ramos. So whenever
I was going to throw that out. That is the X factor.
If they need a goal, there's always Ramos.
Mark him on set pieces.
Or their ace.
Yeah, so, you know, they have that wild card, which I'm not sure that Bayern necessarily has Sergio Ramos. But I think for the over 180 minutes, I think Bayern overall just is in a better position. And yes, to go back to what I said earlier and what Leander reiterated,
Sean is right.
You know, it's scheduling wise, Bayern has a huge advantage. I mean, they can really rest guys. They don't have to play these difficult league fixtures. Their season is not going kaput if they lose. They're still going to win the Bundesliga comfortably.
So if we're ranking this last eight in the Champions League, we're putting Bayern Munich at the top, right? It sounds like from what we've been discussing, with all the advantages that they have, it seems like they're the team to beat. Is that correct?
I think if you had to assign a status to a team to beat, it's probably them. I mean, the top three, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Bayern, are kind of, just based on reputation alone, are sort of the ones you'd have to go with. But in terms of this year and looking at the matchups and the way things are breaking down, I think Bayern is probably as good a bet as the number one team remaining as any of them, because you look around the others, Juventus has got a tremendous defense. I very much believe in them.
It's not just defense, though. Higuain's knocking goals left and right.
And Dybala is they're
It's tough to take Juve off of that top four. It's just that they're playing against Barcelona, and Barcelona, the way that they're playing right now, it's tough to see Juve passing them. But really, if Barca was in a tie with Bayern or with anybody right now, the way that they've played the last couple weeks and what they did in the round of 16 in that second leg, it would be tough to pick anyone past Barcelona. So I think, yes, those four at the top, any order you want to arrange them in. But
there's very little room. Even if you're ranking one of the other.
No, yeah, exactly.
There's very little room between these teams.
Because you're talking about, Real Madrid, you would say, is either second or third. Yeah. They're the defending champions.
And they've won it twice in the last 3 years.
Twice in the last 3 years. Exactly. So they're really, and they're first in La Liga. So you can make a solid argument for every one of these teams. Because if say you put Barcelona ahead of Real Madrid, you're like, well, Real Madrid is the better team in Spain. So how are you going to do that? And then you're also saying that they're the champions, defending champions right now. So it's a very, very difficult thing. But I think all four of those teams, those four, two are going out this round. Which, so if we're saying our top four are those four teams, we're saying two of these top four we are not going to have going to the next round. So we're basically eliminating two of the top eight, but really two of the top four teams in Europe. In this
and then
round.
Just on the outside, the fifth team is Atletico.
Yeah.
Because of what they've done in the past. And then the bottom three, what I was trying to rank them actually before the podcast, Dortmund, Leicester, Monaco. I think, I think you typically would want to put Leicester last, but you can make a case for Monaco being last, Dortmund being last. I think they're all kind of the same to me.
Yeah.
Just because of Leicester's form and Monaco's inexperience and, Dortmund being Dortmund. But yeah, it's clearly we have a top four, and it's unfortunate we're going to lose two of them.
This is probably going to come back to bite me, but this Barcelona thing, I can't shake, for as amazing as their comeback was and how we've talked about it, something like we haven't quite seen before. They lost 4-0 to one of these big sides very recently, relatively speaking. And they needed that miracle. It wasn't just that they won the second leg by as many goals as they did. It's that they needed to come back from, what, 3 down in 20 minutes or something? Like, that is really close. That is playing with, I'm just saying, you need a much better effort against Juve, because there's very recent evidence that Barcelona is not at the top of its game in terms of Champions League play. And so I'm not sure I'm not sure I feel as confident about them as I would in the past, even though they've got all these big names. And yes, maybe they clean up a midweek match in La Liga, but I don't know. I can't shake that for some reason.
Yeah, but I think what you're underestimating is the fact that after they had that defeat, they turned it around in a hurry, and they have not looked back. And even during that stretch, Neymar was playing he was leading the squad and really the top of his game. He's continued to play that well, but seemingly Messi, Suarez, Iniesta, the midfield, like Rakitic back in the fold, they have all these guys that were kind of getting pushed out and looked like they were on the peripheries. They're all coming back into form now at the right time. And as much as this international ban that we just railed against last week may have hurt Messi, it may have seemingly motivated him, because he looked like he was on another level. The way he was playing in Sevilla, you were sitting there going, oh, right, that's why Argentina can't win without this guy. Because that first goal for Suarez, he created it. The two goals that he scored, one of them was just like, normally you would just try and smash it because there was a crowd of people in front of the goal. He perfectly placed it. And then the third goal, he just ran up to a loose ball and smashed it as only Messi can with his left foot, where he whips it in and just pings into the corner. The guy is playing back to his best, and you still have Neymar running these crazy runs, creating. And, a lot of those times, Neymar wouldn't shoot when he got to the end line. he would look for the cutback. He was trying to get Messi a hat trick. Messi almost had it. And Suarez was the guy who set up one of those Messi goals where he was right in front of goal and he could been selfish. The way that the team is playing as a whole, since they had that complete meltdown against PSG, I think it's ancient history at this point when you look back at how long ago that was and what they've done since then.
To me, it's out there. I mean, anything is possible on a given day, and I'm not expecting it to happen again, but the fact that it just happened the last round, it just makes me a little uneasy, that's all.
So in this review of our quarterfinal assessments, we haven't changed anything, have we? We said Atletico over Leicester, Dortmund over Monaco, Bayern.
Well, I have Monaco over Dortmund.
Yeah, okay. I think that was like 3-2 or something.
Okay. Yeah, that was a close one if I recall correctly. But I still, yeah.
But as far as a consensus though,
consensus.
Right? I'll say this.
This is the official FC Yahoo stance on these.
I'm going rogue. I don't need the council.
No, we should do
you
is
we put
did
an asterisk
for
on
we should
it?
Did we did for Euros last year. We should just stump speech for each team and, you know, decide from there. That is the one that is the least consensus, I'll say. I think we're all kind of in agreement on the other ones.
In Juventus, Barcelona, we really think Juve is going to...
I've gone 180 on that one. I think Barca is going to go through.
I'm going to stick to my guns on this one. I think Juve is going to go through.
Leander, what's your official stance on Juve-Barca?
I'm going to flip-flop to Barca as well. I mean, it's been so many times this season that we've thought they were dead, that their dynasty was over, and then they have two or three rollicking games. I think the only thing we can say now certainly about them is that they're inconsistent this year. But I don't see what happened to them against PSG playing out again. I mean, that was such an unusual thing, and that was, you know, how often Barca has been, if we'd sort of span this dynasty, they've been at the top of the European game for a decade now without interruption. And a game like that has really happened once. I don't think it happens twice in the span of three or four European games for them.
That's fair. I also don't think it has to, though, necessarily, for them to go out against Juve.
Hey, you already picked Juve, right?
I'm not flip-flopping.
I picked Barcelona. You know, Joey came up with a convincing argument, but I'm going to stick with Barca.
Thank you.
Just because, you know, Neymar, as I said previously, the star power of Barcelona, I think, will be too great.
What did Alex pick, if we care?
What? Nobody remembers. Nobody listens to Alex.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So.
Okay. All right. Now that we've thrown him under the bus, we're going to need a sound
Mourinho's
effect for that.
Park bus.
Well, we're done with the Champions League, and we're not going to talk about the title races in Europe because we are taping on a Friday before the match days on the weekend. What else is on your guys' minds, soccer-related?
Well, speaking of those title races, and this was something we chatted about but before the podcast, I think it's kind of remarkable how few of Europe's big leagues have had competitive finishes to their league seasons in the last few years. I mean, if you look at Italy, Juventus is ahead 6 points right now. And I think the overwhelming favorites to win it for, I think, what is it, sixth time in a row? Last year, they won it by 9 points. The 2 years before that by 17, and the year before that by 9. And if you look at Germany, it's sort of the same scenario. Bayern's up 10 points. They won it by 10 points the last 2 years, 19 points the year before that, and 25 the year before that. Even the Premier League is not as competitive, maybe, as we like to think, even though it's different teams winning it. Last year, Leicester won by 10, Chelsea won by 8, and 2 years before that, United won by 11. And then, of course, the French league last year was won by Paris Saint-Germain by 31 points last season. And the only one of the major leagues, although I should add that France is competitive this year, but the only one of the major leagues that's consistently competitive is La Liga, because nobody has really won that convincingly. Nobody's run away with that since Barcelona in 2013 when they won it by 15 points. But what do you guys think is up with that?
Well, Spain's the best league in the world currently. I mean, based on what you just said, and also based on the way that they've been performing in Europe. I mean, we've seen them constantly. You know, when we're talking about these Champions League quarterfinals, there's three teams coming out of Spain that we could all see in the semifinals, and we don't think that would be wrong by any means. I mean, if Real, Atletico, and Barca are three of the four semifinalists, that wouldn't shock anybody, would it? But beyond that, I mean, we saw Sevilla, and yes, Sevilla has had a bit of a meltdown because in part their sporting director, Monchi, is leaving, and there's a lot of other stuff going on there as well. They've had a new manager come in this year as well. But still, you're talking about a legit title threat for the first, what, 5/8 of the season? And then you still have teams like Athletic Bilbao, teams in the Basque Country, like, you know, even teams like Celta Vigo, who play tough matches when you go visit them. And then you have a resurgent Villarreal coming back into the league as well. These are teams that, you know, Valencia might be on a little bit of a downtrend right now, but these are teams that have history of competing, not just domestically, but also in Europe. So when you look at the actual strength of that league, it really is head and shoulders above what every other league has to offer currently. And now the Premier League, you know, we always say is possibly the most entertaining, is the way I'll put it, because you don't necessarily have teams getting smashed 5-6-0 from those two top teams in particular. But that said, the quality when we get to Europe doesn't seem to necessarily translate. And I think we see that in the sense that there's a different winner in the league, or seemingly a different winner in the Premier League, whereas Spain, it's more consistent. And so consistently, there's a better title race there. Whereas, you know, we saw Leicester kind of have a few games to spare when they went through. Juve is consistent, but no one else seems to be consistent in Italy. PSG was the consistent side in France, and this year there's a title race because Monaco's kind of jumped up out of nowhere. It was Nice that was challenging early in the season as well. So, you know, France had these new threats that made it more of a title race. But in Spain, I think we've seen that the quality has been consistent regardless of the year.
I think consistency is a good word. I would trend more toward constant. And what I mean by that is the Real Madrid, Barcelona, Twin Towers, so to speak, have been dominating the world game for a number of years. And there have been other reasons for this, but two of the principal reasons are Messi and Ronaldo. So players with, you know, all-time great players like that, I think we could all agree, top five, top 10 players potentially all time, you're going to have, you know, good seasons and challenge for titles every year with players like that. And I would also look at, you know, Diego Simeone's been at Atletico for a while. Yes, Ancelotti, as we talked about before, left Real Madrid a couple years ago, but they promoted Zidane from within, so there's continuity there. And, you know, even for Barcelona, Luis Enrique has been there since, what, like May 2014 or something like that. So there's and I know I understand, like, 3 years is not a long time relatively speaking, but in the world of soccer that can be an eternity, because you've seen the tumult that they've had in England. Yet last year with Leicester City, one of the reasons we all agreed that Leicester won the title is because a lot of the other consistent powers sort of just abdicated their responsibility. There was chaos at Chelsea with Mourinho getting sacked and Gus Hiddink coming on to kind of steady the ship. United has not figured out what they're doing, managerially speaking, ever since Sir Alex Ferguson was gone. City obviously kind of undercut their own manager, who had won the Premier League, by the way, Manuel Pellegrini, to bring in Pep Guardiola. And I'm not saying that decision ultimately is the wrong one, but there's been a little more tumult with these other teams. And, you know, you look at in Serie A, the one consistency has been Juventus, and Max Allegri now has been there for, what, 3 years as well. So I think there's been a little bit more consistency with these teams, and La Liga is the only one where a bunch of them have been consistent for a while in that regard, have been constant for a while.
Yeah, let's not ignore the money factor, especially in Italy and in France, where PSG obviously has been spending way more than any other the clubs, and Monaco is leading Ligue 1 right now. But, you know, we all know for the last few years it's just been PSG. Juventus really hasn't had anyone to match them since AC Milan has been going through this downturn, this uncertainty who's going to own the team. They haven't had any money to spend to match Juve, kind of, you know, man for man, and really that's the team that's really going to compete with them. I know Napoli and Roma have built some nice sides over the last few years, as much as I do watch, little that I do watch Serie A. But, you know, Juventus, to their credit, they have been able to replace Antonio Conte with Max Allegri. He's doing a great job. I mean, coaching does go a long way. And we really haven't had an interesting Premier League title race since, you know, when Steven Gerrard slipped and fell to give Man City, you know, that late run and let them steal the title late. That was 3 years ago.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to add with Italy also is that with the Champions League, the way that the money is divvied up, if you're the team that makes it to the knockout rounds or beyond, you get all of the money for the knockout rounds. So Juve, by going to the finals, for example, when they went, they took all the money. None of the other teams that made the Champions League got any money from the Champions League TV rights. So they get all of Italy's Champions League money. And because the other teams have been kind of stuttering and not advancing, Juve continues to just pocket all that money. So they have an economic advantage in Europe because they continue to play well in Europe, and it kind of builds on itself. That said, I think it goes a little bit beyond, yes, the turmoil below, I think, kind of goes beyond just Juve, and Roma seems to be the team that's best positioned to challenge. But even Roma had to sell Pjanic to Juve because Juve has that type of buying power. So when you look at the way that the league structure is set up, they're essentially now a Bayern in Italy, and even a club as big as Roma is essentially, you know, they're in that Dortmund position of having to sell their best talent or move their best talent onto Juve, because if they want to go, and you know, we saw that with Napoli, who is a consistent team in Europe at this point and finishes in the top three in Italy, having to sell their best striker to Juve. Higuain went, and that was it. They just, he wanted to go. They sold him. They got the bid, and that, you know, there wasn't really any discussion about it. There wasn't even really all that much outrage, because Juve's in that position now where they are the big boys, and as long as AC is still going through this weird sale that's dragged on forever, and as long as Inter continues to just flutter, I'm not sure exactly what's why they do what they do. Even last week, they had a 1-0 lead and ended up losing 2-1 with two late goals. They seem to not be able to get it together, and I'm curious to see how this changes when the Champions League format changes, and we do get four teams for the top four leagues, and Italy's included in there. So once you get four teams guaranteed into the knockout rounds, into the group stages, I mean, you might see a couple teams make it to knockout rounds, and then you're divvying up more money from the Champions League pot anyway.
You know what would have been interesting is if, you know, the explosion of soccer in this country had happened when Serie A was the league, or as Don Gober likes to call MLS, the league of choice, when all the big talents were playing in Serie A. And it was 20 years ago.
This is so weird, because I remember Juve and AC Milan used to be, you know, I saw an interview on another program with Paolo Maldini the other day, and he's always been one of my favorite players, and he always just kind of represented this sturdy Italian defense, but also, you know, prowess, and just the fact that they were the elite league that was competing. They had a team in the Champions League final basically every year, and now it's strange that it's not like that anymore. And looking just at the table, you know, Juve's up, what, 6 points or something like that in Serie A? But in a way, that might be even more crushing than looking at PSG running away with Ligue 1 last year, for example, because they're 6 points up, and you still don't get the sense that they're going to fumble this away, and they're just going to buy, as Sean was saying, some of the best players from the other teams anyway, or those teams are going to be forced to sell their players for some reason, and it's just going to keep that status quo.
So do we want to talk about FIFA rankings?
Well, kind of a segue in that, and I'll ruin another segue. Gabriel Batistuta actually made
it. Batigol!
Yeah, as I call him, Jesus in the flesh, made a comment actually recently saying that Argentina should probably stop calling up Higuain and give him a bit of a rest. And instead, he said they should call up Mauro Icardi, because Icardi's been known to bank some big-time goals for his club team, which is Inter Milan, and he's the right age.
He's a different type of striker too.
He's, yes, and yeah, one that actually scores goals consistently.
a little mobile. That's what I was getting at.
Well, not saying anything against Higuain. He's arguably been, you know, he set the Serie A record last year for most. But then every time he shows up with Argentina, he seems to mess up chances. You know, people who really follow the Argentina national team point to Higuain and say, he's the reason we don't have a World Cup. He's the reason we don't have a Copa America.
All remember the misses. They all called him out, whether it's against Chile or against Germany.
And he's had plenty. He's had enough chances where, let's say in generations past, you would stop getting the call-up. But because he's performed at this high level with his club team, he seems to still get the call-up, whereas Icardi's been overlooked over, you know, time and again, because they have that attacking talent of Aguero's always getting the call-up. Frankly, Aguero hasn't really performed up to standard at the national team level either. And there are a couple of guys where
it's been shocking.
You kind of want to look and say, should we still keep calling these guys up? And you know, it kind of takes us to the FIFA rankings, which Argentina is now second. They've dropped off, and frankly,
one spot.
Yeah, they've dropped off one spot to two, even though they are number five in South American qualifying.
go figure. That's
yeah. The top team though is Brazil, and I think we're all in agreement that the country that wears, you know, green and gold is looking like the best team on the planet right now. They're banging in goals. They're playing the beautiful game, right? It's kind of where the name originated in many ways, was calling it the beautiful game because of the way that they played up tempo. They passed the ball around, but they really scored goals. And that's what everybody wants to see. And Brazil right now is scoring goals on everybody. What do you guys think about the new FIFA rankings, where I believe the Netherlands are 32?
Well,
I wonder who should talk next now.
Yeah, that's not for us, me and Joey.
It'll probably be petty to go and say, well, you know, the FIFA rankings are stupid, which they are. The ELO rankings tend to be much more accurate. But,
Where do the Dutch rank there?
I'm not sure, and I don't know that I care to find out. But as I wrote in a long post on the blog last week, is that it's not undeserved for Holland to fall off so far, because they're probably not going to qualify for the World Cup, and before that they didn't qualify for the Euro. This is a bad Holland team, and it's really the first time since, you know, the late 60s, early 70s, that the Dutch have really had a bad spell. Does that mean they're a worse national team than Hungary and Iran and Northern Ireland? I'm not so sure. But, you know, those are the vagaries of the world rankings. I mean, likewise, it's a little bit odd, I think, that, you know, Poland is 11th over Italy and England and Uruguay and Mexico. But, you know, there we are.
You know, one of the teams that made the biggest jumps in these latest FIFA rankings is the U.S. men's national team. They jumped seven spots from 30 to 23. That said, the top CONCACAF teams are Mexico at 16 and Costa Rica at 20. Do you guys think that's an accurate assessment of where Bruce Arena's U.S. men's national team should be?
Perhaps right now, because even though the team made the jump that you mentioned, it did so by beating the 68th ranked team, and the 57th, I think, is what Panama is. So, these rankings, we all hate them. We love to tear them apart. And I think that they place a little too much emphasis on how you did. I just think that the current form, maybe the last couple of years, should be far more important than how you've done in four-year cycles. And they weigh the 2 years prior to the last 2 years too much. And that's where I'm just sitting here. Argentina is going to miss the World Cup because Messi's not going to be available for these qualifiers. And there's a very real chance that they won't be going to the World Cup along with Holland. And it's like, you're number two. Right now, I for everything they get right, I feel like they get three things wrong. And in terms of the United States, is the United States the 23rd best team in the world, tied with Slovakia right now? Maybe. I mean, I think you could come up with a pretty convincing list of 20 teams that are better than them. But for every one of those, England's 14th and Mexico is 16th, and they could play anywhere. They could play at Wembley, they could play at the Azteca, they could play on Pluto. Although I wouldn't advise that because humans can't, you know. Okay, whatever. But Mexico would take that match no matter where it's played, and I think most people would agree with that. So I'm already ranting. The FIFA rankings are just—they're so bad.
Here's the thing: when I was looking at these rankings, you know, you look at all the teams behind the U.S. right now: Ecuador, Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, Iran, Bosnia Herzegovina, Senegal, Hungary, Netherlands, Cameroon. These are teams that are going to be in the friggin' World Cup finals, right? When they expand to, you know, to Gianni Infantino's Dream World Cup. We're going to be seeing all these teams.
It's going to be a true World Cup. There will be no nation on the earth that is not at this competition.
Well, I'm pretty sure Pakistan still won't make it. Okay.
The Philippines aren't going to make it either. So.
Well, not if your son doesn't play.
Yeah, it's
true. Yeah, you need to convince him, Joe.
That's a you problem.
Yeah.
10 years from now, he'll be 19. But that's the thing that struck me was when I was going through these ridiculous rankings was how bad the soccer is going to be for that first World Cup when it's expanded.
I took a quick peek at the ELO rankings here, and it appears that at the moment the Netherlands is 18th in those, while the United States is 32nd. Brazil still in first place, followed by Germany, Argentina, Spain, France. Mexico is in 9th place, which I think we have to tip our cap to. And I think that's pretty much it for the notable ones. The U.S. is stuck between Slovakia and Serbia.
32nd.
That sounds more accurate, to be honest with you. I kind of agree with those more, Leander.
I do too.
I still don't understand. Argentina is not a top five team in the world right now. I'm sorry.
Well, just because they haven't called up Icardi yet.
That's true.
Give it time.
It's a quick fix.
All right, guys. I think that's it for this pod. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we're available on SoundCloud. And also, please review our podcast. It helps. So, another podcast in the books. Thanks, guys. For Shahan Ahmed, Joey Galino, Leander Charlakins, I'm Joe Lago. This has been the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.